Hey there, and welcome to episode 49 of the Better With Running podcast. My name is Matt Davey, coach at Run to PB, and alongside me, as always, I've got my co-host and excited Essendon supporter after the Anzac Day match, Zacha Newman. How are you going, mate?
Good, Mattress. Yes, it was great to get the win. Been a while, I think, for Anzac Day wins for the Bombers. So, yeah, it was a very enjoyable game to watch. And you're a Melbourne supporter, aren't you, Mattress?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, so it was a good win. On Saturday night against the Tigers.
Booked your tickets for the finals yet?
Not yet.
Not
yet.
Yeah.
But, messaging Brady, a diehard Collingwood supporter.
Yes. Yeah, there was a bit of tension in the Run to PB family with Brady, and he was adamant they were going to win, but yeah, good to get the win over them.
He went very quiet, didn't he?
He did, yes. But yeah, great to catch up again, Matty, and talk all things running. And yeah, we've got a big one this week. We've got our returning guest, Sophie Fitt, Run to PB coach, the podiatrist at Fitt's Pod, 242 marathoner. And yeah, she's joining us for a bit more of an in-depth chat about some of some running injuries and some women's health. So yeah, that was it's always great to catch up with Soph.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. No. Looking forward to that. And also looking forward to hearing how your week's gone. So, yeah, can you fill us in on your 118 kilometre week, mate?
Not quite up to the 180K. I don't think I'll get up to 180K in this preparation. But, it's things are going pretty well. I think the previous week was, that sort of 130, 129K week. So this was, I guess, a scheduled lighter week. Also knowing that Melbourne Uni had their season launch, Mattress. You didn't turn up for that one, mate. You missed the invite for that.
Yeah, you must have got lost in the mail, mate.
But, so I knew that was happening on the Saturday. So that worked in well, having a bit of a lighter week, a bit more focused on speed. A bit of turnover, and then to use that park run catch up with some of the Melbourne Uni crew, and that was the goal on the Saturday to get a workout, and then just to sort of get the wheels moving a bit, did a fartlek on the Tuesday. But I don't know about you, Matt, I don't know if you ran Tuesday night, but it absolutely belted down here in Melbourne. Rain-wise, it was like one of those things. I actually run easy in the morning, and it was clear and nice. And I was kicking myself later at 5:30 when I was getting ready to go out the door when it was starting to rain pretty heavily, thinking I should have flipped the session around and did it in the morning. But yes, no backing out. So got it done. But it was one of those ones where I think motivation was a little bit lower with the conditions, and just warming up I also noticed I just had to be a bit careful because I haven't done things in the dark like this sort of pace for a while, and I was out at Yarra Boulevard. I didn't probably plan this properly. I should have gone to a more well-lit area, and Yarra Boulevard, it's not the brightest place to be doing it when it's teeming down in rain and you got bikes coming. And I probably was a little bit cautious in it, and backed off the pace. Still got the job done. Like, I didn't go flat out. It was probably a little bit, a bit of a lighter session, I guess. Maybe more of a three-quarter session. I guess justified that it was a lighter week. So managed to get through that, and probably just going forward, I'll where possible pay attention a bit more to scheduling workouts, that especially when you're going at that pace. I think it's easier when you're doing the longer, I don't know for you, Mattress, but if you're doing, say, 8 or 10 minute reps in those conditions, but when you're doing the shorter one minute or 2 minute reps in there, that change of pace and in the conditions, it's got to be a little bit more careful.
You got to kind of pull it back just that little bit because that's right. When you've got those bikes flying around, heading home from work, and you're trying to, or they're weaving in and around you, or you're weaving in around them, it becomes a bit of a dangerous little situation there. And if you're right, if you're trying to belt a 1 minute effort, and you come a clipper with one of them, you're gonna end up worse than them, I'd say.
Yeah, and I think also knowing races, I've got a head, and I just want to be in one piece. So got through that, and then the rest of the week was just some pretty easy running. Yeah, just was able to log some mileage, and then got myself up for the park run at over at Princess Park. And actually had Will Goodall, one of the Runs BB athletes who I coach. He was jumping in, so saw him in the warm up, and then he managed to actually run a pretty good 5K. I set out with Isaac Hockey, who is a Melbourne Uni club member. He sort of offered and said, he asked me during the week what I wanted to run, and I was sort of hoping to run about 15:30, 15:40, and he was doing Isaac's a very, very good athlete. He thinks he's a 337, 1500 guy, or 38. Yep. Definitely 14 minutes recently for a 5K, and 8 minutes for a 3 is very quick. And he was doing a workout. So he said, I'll go out at sort of 1530 pace for you. And I tried to hang on to him for about 2K. And then he was going at a nice consistent pace, and it just fell off. And there was another couple of Melbourne Uni guys that were Nick Dennis and Maxi Ueda, all sort of formed a pack. And after the first K going through 3 or 4, I almost felt like I was on my limit and it was going to go backwards from there. And hitting that 2K mark, I really lost contact and it became a struggle, but then was able to just relax again. And I think sometimes when you are getting back into that shorter race mode where you've got to be on from the gun and at the start, I think you just need a bit of practice at that. You need to get used to that uncomfortable feeling, and I probably haven't done enough of that. I guess the last few weeks, and a lot of my workouts have been longer, and you kind of build into it. So that was a shock to the system, but managed to sort of salvage it middle of the, and I think the back end of it, I felt a bit more comfortable and a bit stronger. Finished in about 16 minutes, and then was doing a 10 minute, so I jogged for about 2-3 minutes, and then got into a 10 minute strong effort, which I actually came out pretty good. I think I ran 3:25 for the 10 minutes. Still good, very good session, brings you forward. And I think now, that'll sort of set me up next week to hit gels.
Yeah, and you haven't done, like you're saying, you haven't done heaps of that work around, I guess, that 5K, 3K sort of efforts there. And it's such a different type of feeling going at those paces compared to the longer work that you've been doing. So, I mean, that kind of does make sense when you think about it. But I reckon you bounce off that. Like quite often with those sorts of runs, you can bounce off them and feel a lot stronger when you're it's like taking you to another level, and you can recognize, that hurts, not that bad.
You
go into the next block and sort of work a lot. You're a lot used to that sort of hurt.
Yeah, and it might be a bit of extra, like I've the last 3-4 weeks have probably been the most mileage I've done in quite a few years. So a bit of cumulative fatigue in the legs. And I know coming off that, what was really positive, I did 2 hours on Sunday, and that felt good. That was as good as I felt on a Sunday. So that's positive, that recovery's there. And we'll move forward. We've got another week of back to sort of, pretty decent mileage this week into another hard effort on the Saturday at the Gels.
Awesome, mate. No, tracking along well, and Gels Park's looking like a hopeful win for Melbourne Uni, would you say?
Don't know about it. Yeah. If we can get on the podium, that would be a fantastic result. But, you never know. It in a relay, people can find another gear. So we'll see what happens. And you, Matty, last week you were sort of just testing the waters with some runs. How about this week? You're still in the same position. Few easy runs popped up on Strava. How's your week been?
Yeah, very much. Yeah, very similar to, I guess, the last week when I was just trying to tick over sort of 30 to 40 minute runs each day. And yeah, a couple of them felt all right. A couple of them felt quite rubbish. And so I really tried to focus on letting my body sort of catch up and recover. Yeah, get plenty of good food in and try to sleep as much as possible. And that seems to be working reasonably well, because then it came to, I took Friday off and then went to, I had one of my athletes, Johnny Matthews down at, having a hit out around park run down at Hastings, and then also had Gemma out there too, and Karina was having a run, Karina Fife, so just another training partner. And so, yeah, we went down to park run down at Hastings foreshore, and I thought I'd just test the waters a little bit, just see how I felt, not try to hammer it, not try to race it, just try to get into a nice groove and see how I sort of progressed through the 5K. So, yeah, got to that, and it was, I guess, compared to the week before, I only got through the warm-up, and that was it, had to stop. So there was a big progression where, I mean, it wasn't amazing. Like, I ran 19:39, so I mean, it's like 4 minutes off my best around that course, but it was progress from the week before. So I think what I'm doing, taking a day or two off a week and just sticking to that 30, 40 minute runs is allowing my body to catch up, because it sounded like when I got sick back in December, and then like I got really quite sick, then had in the back of my mind I wanted to get right for Hobart half, and it seems like just because I tried to put, like, to get ready for the half, I really wanted to sort of push it and get as fit as possible and have a really good run there. And I think my body sort of just went backwards from that and just didn't get the opportunity to fully recover from that illness back in December, that viral infection. So
yeah,
I think that sort of, is what's playing up at the moment. And yeah, just sticking to those easy runs, sort of 5 to 6 a week, is hopefully going to get my body back again and everything, I don't know, in a position to start progressing.
How are your energy levels? During the day, are you noticing that's restoring?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I do feel like the energy is coming back a lot. But it's more, and that is definitely something that is improving. But it is, the runs aren't really coming out as easy as what they have in the past, especially my heart rate was averaged about 184-ish for that park run, where like at a pace like that, it should be a lot lower than that. Still a long way to go, but I feel like there has been some progress. Because then again, rocked up on the Sunday and ran with Gemma and Karina again and another girl, Mel. They like to get moving in their long runs. I only did 45 minutes. So I turned it at 23 or something, because I was feeling a bit tired at that point. Yeah.
Look at that run. Yeah. Was that first K in 4:24?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was one of the fastest first Ks I've done for
the starting blocks
in a month. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So yeah, that one, felt that one and was a little bit tired off that the next day or today. Took it real easy, and I think that's sort of the progression I'll try to take over this next couple of weeks, and hopefully that'll get me feeling good and within 2 weeks and ready to maybe put in a session or something like that.
No, it looks like week on week there is a nice there is a steady improvement happening, and good to hear the energy's coming back, and even to be able to run like that Sunday, even for that 10K at 4:20s, then things are on the upward.
Yeah, it's just like, it's so hard to be patient.
Yeah,
I just know that I have to be, otherwise I'll end up in the same place again in a month or so. So yeah.
Yeah. And I guess, knowing that it's a long season ahead, you know, there's a lot more opportunities down the track. So, you know, whether you just have to push the timeline out a little bit longer, reschedule what you had planned and just, be comfortable that there is time to the, you know, second half of the year to really get cranking.
Yeah. My thought was that there's always going to be another race.
Well, yeah. 100%. Yeah.
No doubt about that. Yep. So yeah, that's how my week's been.
Yeah.
But thanks, Matt. Talking about someone who's traveling well, I've got to give a bit of a shout out to Supreeth over in Texas running the Austin half marathon.
Supreeth's previous guest on the Better With Running podcast. Had a chat to him. Well, Jack Davies coaches him here, based here in Melbourne. And Supreeth's had a blinder over in the Austin half marathon. He's a resident of Texas, Supreeth. And massive PB, 131.45. So he's taken 5 minutes off his off his half marathon time. So it's huge performance. I know he just kept his head down during the lockdowns and during COVID. And I think obviously races are coming back in the US. And able to capitalize on that with a huge PB. And I was just reading his Strava description, big PB, legs completely cooked from the hills after 15K. It doesn't sound like it's the fastest course going around as well, but massive day and a huge PB for him.
Yeah, and a massive, 185 meters elevation over the half. So that's a old bit of climb. That's really going to beat the legs up, and to run a 5 minute PB off that. Massive. Congratulations to Supreeth.
Yes, I think recently he was at this, it was a 5K, I think, a Blue Bonnet, or maybe it was 10K actually, Blue Bonnet race over in Texas as well. And he was rocking the Run to BB kit and had the hat on. And it was pretty cool to see someone in the US doing so well. And big shout out to Supreeth, well done. And and obviously Jack Davey, his coach, he was stoked. I know he sent me a message to say, hey, have a look at this. This is a huge run from Supreeth.
Yeah, that's amazing. Congratulations to them both. And another one we want to give a shout out to, Zaka, is Amy Stockwell, who competed in a 4-day stage race at the Run Lara Pinta, a trail running race along some of the most spectacular sections. Zaka,
Have you seen
Northern Territory?
I don't know. On socials, there was a lot of photos popping up of this race. I don't know if you've had a chance to have a glance at some of these photos, but it is unbelievable landscape and terrain that the competitors ran over. And this was a four-day stage race. And Amy absolutely blitzed it. It was six overall and the third female across the line in the shorter version of the stage race. And first day you had an 11.5K, the second day 22K, 20K on the third stage and the 26K on the last day. So that's a big day, big 4 days of running in that environment.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? And to come third female, step up on the podium. So huge result for Amy.
Yeah, and Josh Harris, who coaches Amy. Josh is based in Tassie and Amy's actually based in the Northern Territory. So for one bottom of the country up to the top. Very cool story and a great race from Amy. So we'll definitely be looking forward to seeing where she pops up in the next one, because that's a pretty epic race to get involved in. Okay, welcome back to the Better With Running podcast. Sophie Fitt, great to have you back on. Always a popular segment when you jump on the mic. So great to have your expertise. How have you been going?
Good, Zaka. Thank you for having me. G'day, Matt. How are you both? Nice to join you for a bit of a chat on this Monday arvo.
Yeah, that's all right. No, thanks very much for jumping on. And first of all, looking at the winter season fast approaching, Soph, and lots of runners looking to prep for Gold Coast Marathon, three Chinmoy races, Mother's Day Classic, etc. How are your athletes going at the moment?
Yeah, I've got a, you know, really steady little stable there that's chugging along really nicely. As you said, pretty much those races you mentioned, I've got at least one or more athletes prepping for something. Everyone's, yeah, going really well, actually. I'm really happy with where all our different, my different athletes are at. Couple did Hobart, so that's sort of, you know, they're at a different phase, which always keeps things interesting. But certainly there'll be at least four running Gold Coast. There's a Melbourne-based Tree Chin Noi run in May that I've got one of my girls, Steph, running. And then Alan's doing Mother's Day Classic. He also did Run the Rock recently. So, yeah, a bit happening. And then, as you say, AV creeping up on us. And it's, I think it's just nice to be looking ahead to see races because it's 2 years since we're in that position and it feels like it.
Yeah, it's just a... It's great as a coach as well, being able to, yeah, plan races and see your athletes sort of hard work, go into a race and get a result and, chase down some PBs.
Yeah, even just park run. Like I messaged you, Zach, not long ago because I couldn't find enough information about park runs. I didn't want to sort of put them on too many programs without being sure. But, yeah, just the idea of having park runs back, like that's still – exciting to be amongst people and a clock and all the things we love and we run for, you know, well, some of the reasons, back in our lives. So it's good.
Yeah. We're very lucky here in Australia, obviously, compared to a few other countries, that we've got these, the allowance to be able to do it at the moment and get those started and off the ground and excited to get out to Gels Park for the first XCR race on Saturday.
Indeed. Yeah, actually, we speak sort of a little bit flippantly, don't we? But we really are lucky. And so many of, obviously, the Run to PB community is based in countries that aren't in a position like us. So, yeah, not forgetting our friends who don't have the freedom at the moment around participation in mass numbers. So, yeah, certainly thinking of those people as well. I guess we are getting a little bit, maybe a little bit, not complacent in our actions, but just realizing far out, like we are actually really lucky to be able to do that. Mm.
Hey, Soph, just on the back of talking about some of the athletes you've got lining up and some of your athletes, I guess, in your little stable have varied levels of experience with their running, whether they're new or they're, you know, even aging runners, I guess we all go through stages of running where injuries crop up or niggles crop up. And it's, I guess, put your podiatry hat on. And I thought it'd be interesting to get your take on this is that I guess when these things do crop up in training and that you do get pain, it's something that I know Maddie and I discuss a little bit privately as coaches when we have athletes that are struggling with injuries, that level of training in pain and I guess from your podiatry standpoint, when is it okay to keep going? Because, you know, we've all been in those situations where, you want to keep going, but you're not sure, is this, you know, do I need to see someone? And I'd probably love to hear your thoughts on that. I know it's pretty broad.
No, that's fine. And I think I will try and keep it general. Obviously, I'll speak clinically here as a practicing podiatrist and my focus is obviously lower limb and foot, but I want to flesh this out a little bit more and keep it a little bit more general just in terms of what people feel and how they can go about managing what they feel. So I guess a nice way to put it and what I speak to athletes and certainly patients about is if you don't think you can deal with niggles and setbacks and not feeling good, running's probably not the sport for you because every single runner is going to have days when they don't feel good, niggles and injury. It's just part and parcel with what happens. So it's not a rare occurrence. It's absolutely the rule, not the exception. But I do want to talk a little bit, and thanks for the opportunity, to discuss when you feel something, what are you supposed to do? And what's the difference between, say, fatigue versus, say, pathological tissue versus vulnerable tissue versus injury kind of thing? So I'll speak quite generally, and I want people to sort of adopt these ideas in those general terms. But I hope listeners get a little bit more reassurance around being able to identify what they feel and locate that beside a bit of an action plan that they can take. And also, hopefully, this will perhaps put people's mind at ease and equip them with some decision-making skills around what to do. So the way I think of it is, very commonly in clinic, we use what's called the VAS, the visual analog scale. And if you think of it in terms of 0 to 10, 0 is no pain, nothing at all, can't feel a thing. Your earlobe is a 0, right? And 10 is excruciating pain. Essentially, you can't, I'll use the foot, for example, you can't weight bear. So almost the worst pain you could think of, like excruciating pain. I like to think of pain, discomfort, then I talk in subjective terms. So this is all very subjective. It's not objective measures, but we only ever compare one person's subjective measure to their own subjective measure. It's not compared to anyone else. So your 0 is your 0. Your 6 is what you feel as 6 compared with what you feel as 2, et cetera, et cetera. So using the visual analog scale, and then in addition to the visual analog scale, utilizing terminology such as awareness. So I'm aware of something in my body. Discomfort, like I'm uncomfortable. And then sort of extending on to pain. So pain and awareness are pretty different, and they're kind of different to discomfort. And I think most people, if you think about it, you can identify, I can feel this versus this is quite uncomfortable versus I'm in pain. So thinking about those terms and the visual analog scale, if you're going out running, and let me make it very clear, fatigue and tiredness, even lethargy, is very different to an injury. So if you feel tired, or even DOMS, like delayed onset muscle soreness, that's not pathological. So that's just fatigue. That's just the way the body feels. So try and brush those feelings, try and compartmentalize that into one area. And then think about symptoms in terms of, is it just an awareness of it? Is it uncomfortable, or am I in pain? And using the visual analog scale, I'd like to think that athletes who are out there, if you start running and you can rate your discomfort between, say, a 0 and a 3, and the pain gets better or goes away as you run and dissipates completely by the end of the run, and you have no pain afterwards, and this pattern of pain, 0 to 3, getting better and not sore afterwards, lasts less than 2 weeks, I wouldn't be too worried about it, so long as it goes away. So you can have those sort of 0 to 3 symptoms and not be, you know, calling the physio or the podiatrist or the osteopath or whatever you go to. I mean, of course, if you feel 0 to 3 and you want it checked out straight away, be my guest. Like, come on in. That's what we like. But if you are just like time poor, potentially not in a position to see someone, lots going on. If you're a 0 to 3, the pain goes away as you run. You don't have pain afterwards. And this sensation that you feel lasts less than 2 weeks, I wouldn't be too worried about it. You can probably just almost forget about it. If it's more than a 3, so 3 to 4 to 5 or 6 out of 10, it lingers with when you run, it gets worse as you run, and it's sore afterwards. And certainly if you've experienced that more than 4 or 5 days in a row, up around 4, 5, 6 out of 10, that to me is pathological tissue. That something's not quite right. And probably the earlier that you see someone, the better, because a quick, faster diagnosis can mean an action plan or strategy is put into place quite quickly, and you can get right on top of it. Using that sort of 3 to 6, because that something's not right if you're in a 3 to 6 discomfort. That's probably you're running along and you're thinking about it all the time. And then anything more than a 5, 6, 7, 8, certainly 8, 9, 10, absolutely you need to be seen. And so you should book in and see GP, if you don't know who to see, but an allied health professional like a physiotherapist, osteo, chiro, myo, podiatrist, someone to have an assessment done and a treatment and management strategy put in place. The other thing I use when I'm talking about that 0 to 3 region, because these are the people who potentially won't be seen in clinic, I use, and this is self-identified, this is not in a textbook, and it's probably not research-based either, but I use 3 KPIs that I talk to my patients about. And the 3 KPIs are, how do you feel and what's your rating during the run? That's 1 KPI. How do you feel and what's it doing an hour after? So you get home, have a shower, get changed, have something to eat, get on with your day. An hour after you've stopped, how does your injury feel? That's your second KPI. And how do you feel the morning after when you get out of bed and you start walking to open the blind or whatever you do? How does it feel? If you're in that 0 to 3 category in those three KPIs, it doesn't linger and it goes away in a couple of weeks. You don't really, you probably don't need to be seeing a clinician if you don't want to. And that's talking about all sorts of tissue pathology. So tendon, ligament, joint, bone, fascia, kind of everything really. I mean, I can speak more technically in terms of like specific foot pathology, but I think I want listeners to just take away the general principles here and understand what is the difference between awareness, discomfort, and pain, and when is it okay to kind of monitor and manage, and when should you probably put or seek someone else's support?
That's fantastic. The way you've broken that down, and particularly, I guess, in 0 to 3, I know personally that maybe I've been able to keep some of these in that 0 to 3, maybe previous niggles or past injuries into that 0 to 3 range through the action plan or keeping on top of, I know even with Achilles issues in the past, if I start to do a bit more maybe track work or some of the faster thing, it creeps back and it might go into a 4 or 5, but I can actually get it back into a 0 to 3 when I get back on top of the exercises or, you know, any of the activations and things like that. So
the only thing I would say though, if you're getting very comfortable in 0 to 3 and it's been more than a month, you're starting to get a bit used to pain. Like you're not pain, sorry, because it wasn't pain, but you're starting to almost get a bit used to it. If you haven't had it assessed, and I mean, you're self-monitoring really well there because it's getting a little bit worse, but you're bringing it back. So you're noticing a difference, but then you know how to manage what you feel, and that's great. But if that goes on for a prolonged period, something's still not quite right. Yeah. And in that situation, I would say, because if that was me, like I'm super fussy, like I'm hypersensitive. If I'm a 2 out of 10 and it's been a 2 out of 10 for a while, man, I want help. Like I need someone treating that thing.
Yeah.
So it's really looking at those time frames and journal entries and even putting notes on if you run to PB athlete and you're using final surge, that sort of thing. Noting this stuff because you know what it's like? Time flies by. Mm. And it's been 4 weeks and, you know, you're sort of just getting used to this 3 out of 10 or 4 out of 10.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to get used to pain. Pain's not normal. Like it's indicative of something not being quite right, and no one has to put up with it because there's very easy ways to assess what's wrong and look after it.
Yeah, I like the idea of those KPIs that you had. And would you ever put another one in of if your running form is changing due to
sort of
discomfort? Would you add that? Could you add that in as well?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Not in a textbook or anything, probably. But
oh, well, that's why it's not in a textbook. We just manipulate it. But yeah, certainly. And that would slide in right beside the how does it feel when it runs. And actually, to a lot of my patients, not athletes, I actually talk about of the three KPIs, I'm probably less concerned if you can feel it a little bit when you're running. Because I mean, every step you take, you've got 4 to 8 times your body weight running through your joints. So you're probably going to feel it a bit. But particularly an hour after, if you come home, really chilled out, completely relaxed, food in, showered, relaxed. If you're in pain then, that's a bit of a concern. And absolutely when you wake up the next morning, I'm not talking about, oh, I'm just a bit tight and sore and stiff of a morning. Mind you, that in itself is not ideal. But if your focal localized pain in that region of tissue the morning after, yeah, that goes on for a few weeks. That's when I'd be sort of getting some advice around it.
I think it's very key for athletes to let their coaches know and have that really open line of communication. And if something is, give them any discomfort to let them know and whether modifications then need to be put in place for their program.
That was exactly my next point. Thanks, Matt. Yeah, I was just going to say, open communication with your coach is absolutely critical. And there's nothing to be like, oh, look, if I tell them, they're not going to give me, you know, hard work. And if they tell me, they'll back my K's off. And if I tell them, I won't be able to race. It's not really like that, because essentially if you've had a few weeks in that 0 to 3 zone, probably really all you need is a day or two off.
Mm.
chop your long run from, you know, hour 45 to maybe easy 60 minutes, cut out two workouts, you know, drop a second run. Like, all these things are so easy, and sometimes you need someone to do it for you, and then it's on the program. And that's all that you needed to just let that tissue, just deload the tissue and improve, you know? So yeah, absolutely, please. I wish people would just tell their coaches. Yeah. And they can rate it out of 10 or whatever they want to do. Don't have to go into absolute specifics of where it is in the body, but indicating that something has been of discomfort and indicating the duration that they've felt that for. I mean, that's why you pay people to coach you, to help you, so that you, they can monitor the load.
Another thing around, say, shoes, are you a big advocate for, say, keeping your eye on the mileage in each shoe? And then is that something that you could kind of look back on and go, hey, this is why it's a reoccurring theme here, you're not changing shoes often enough, or even of late, the new technology that's coming in with different shoes available for different sessions, I guess, is that helping us as well, or is that almost hindering us in some ways, because we might be running, you know, on these great carbon shoes and, you know, doing workouts, and I don't know, is that helping our bodies?
Yeah, so interesting what you say. All of my patients, after they've seen me, I'd like to think they're doing what I've told them, and that is monitoring their mileage. And I break it down and make it as simple as this. Once you are hopefully running consistently, which is the goal with everyone, just have a rough idea of how many Ks you log in a week. Let's say it's 40. That equates to 160 kilometers per month. And then just work it out per month. And I talk about 700 to 800 kilometers per pair of shoes. That's a very general statement, considering we've all got different body compositions and the ability for the density of the foam in the midsole of the shoe to compress, et cetera, et cetera. But loosely speaking, they used to say it was up around 1,000, but the more the commentary now is around 700 to 800 kilometers per pair of shoes. Mm. So, I mean, I don't like people to get super fussy. I know Strava can track a lot of this, but so many people don't have those platforms. So I just say roughly know how many kilometers you cover in a week, roughly times by 4 gives you a month, just approximates, and then put it in your diary. Like, you know, check footwear now. And then patients who I've seen in clinic will be aware of some easy techniques to look at, or strategies to check if their shoes are potentially worn out. But now that the running company stores are popping up all over the place, one of the great things about the running company store that I work most closely with is, well, my patients can just take their shoes and just say, look, just tell me if these are cooked or not. Just tell me. And the team in there are so honest. If your shoes are fine, they'll say, your shoes are fine, come back in a month. Mm-hmm. And if your shoes are not fine, which generally they're not, they'll assist you. So that's on the mileage. The other thing I'm starting to find out, and it's taken this many years of podiatry to kind of really identify this, I am 100% sure there are so many people in the wrong size shoe. I think most people are half to a size smaller than they think they are, half to a full size smaller. And that's a really common problem. You're supposed to have a generous, so basically the size of like your thumbnail, but actually probably more a male thumbnail, because their thumbnails are often bigger than a female thumbnail. You take the measurement when you're standing, because that's weight bearing, not when you're sitting. So you stand up wearing your runners properly laced up, and then just get someone to push down, and the space between the top of your toe, not when you're flexing it up towards your nose, just when it's sitting there, the space between the top of your toe and the top of the shoe should be a very generous male fingernail, thumbnail, or about 12 millimeters. And that's very rarely the case. And most patients who go to running company come back in half a size or a full size bigger. And I reckon that's contributing to a lot of problems. What you say about new shoe technology, in my honest opinion, I think if you're carrying an injury, let's say you've got a second metatarsal stress fracture, you can be in the best shoes. It's going to be pretty sore. It might have covered it up for a little while, and it might feel more like a 4 than a 6. But if you've got real tissue pathology, I don't really think it matters too much what you're wearing on your feet. I think you're going to feel it. Yeah. And if you can't feel it at all because of the shoes, probably not that big of a deal.
Yeah, that's some really good advice. And I'm getting lost, actually. So I'm not sure how you are with all the new shoes coming out. Like I'd sort of stuck to a lot of Nikes, but then Looking at, I've worn a couple of ASICs lately, but I just can't keep up with them all. How do you go with all that?
Yeah, such a good, I thought you were about to say you're getting lost with what I'm saying. If you're getting lost, everyone's going to be lost. I get so lost. Yeah. So I have the tech reps come out to me quite frequently. Shout out to Matt Spicer, who works for New Balance, and comes out to me like probably 5 or 6 times a year.
Nice man. Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm like obsessed. And we like block out 2 hours because we like chat for 90 minutes and then we do 30 minutes to shoot. maybe that's part of the problem. But it's so hard to keep track because like the brands used to drop twice a year and now they're dropping so much more. And you just wrap your head around one season or drop and then something else. So it's really hard. And that's why I think relationships with, I work in Fitzroy and the closest clinic, running company is Clifton Hill. So that's Chris and the team. All of the teams around running company, and I refer to Yarraville, Lilydale, Ballarat, Geelong, everywhere. That's why I just think you need a really close relationship with your shoe store because it's so hard to keep up. And so I talk to the team at running company and my patients more in terms of what characteristics of the shoe do I want them to be in rather than brands and models. And there's 2 reasons for that. The first reason is because I probably don't even know what shoe they should be in. And the second one is I don't really care what the brand or model is. I might want heel pitch. I might want some rocker. I might want 4-foot space. I might want, you know, a certain manufacturer with the stitching. Like I just write down the characteristics of the shoe and some very broad terminology around what we're treating, you know, with the patient's permission, obviously. And then I've spoken to a couple of the team members at running company Clifton Hill, and they kind of like, the more broad and general it is, the easier. Because if I say to someone, you need New Balance 1080s, boom, it's in their head, 1080s. Yeah. They're not going to be open to other ideas. Mm. Now, if you're saying, do you take my advice or their advice? Take their advice. Mm. They know shoes better than I know shoes. So I don't like people to walk in with preconceived ideas because then if, you know, the salesperson says you need Mizuno, they might be like, oh, Sophie said. It's like, well, Sophie doesn't know. I definitely get quite lost, Matt. I used to be like a real shoe geek and now it actually get a bit overwhelmed. In keeping up with it. It's hard to keep up, but I just look at really general characteristics of the shoe and where that can fit with some of the most common things I see in clinic.
That's great. I mean, the options available now, the different brands, like it, you know, there is so many shoes out there, but it's, I think previously as runners, we probably got a bit too rigid and just like, oh, this is what I've always worn and I'm not taking any risks. I'm not going to try and, you know, change into a different brand or this is what works for me. And I think it's great that, you know, if you get advice from say a running company that they will, you know, in guidance with a podiatrist, they can actually get you into a different shoe that may be the difference between, you know, with some of your injuries that are recurring or just a better performance shoe.
You have no idea how many injuries are solved by just changing shoes. Completely the whole situation fixed. They were just in the wrong shoe. So yeah. It's got to be the starting point in injuries management. And I find people, and I hope they are, less loyal now. You know, consumers don't need to be loyal. They should only be thinking about their health and well-being. They should only be thinking about the best shoe for them. And I don't really think patients should be loyal. I really don't. Like, I just think you should be very open-minded to trying a new shoe that could be better for you. And yet 6 or 12 months ago, X, Y, and Z might've been the best thing for you. And now there's something that's better for you. And I think if you're steadfast in your belief of just getting the best thing for you and looking after your body, I don't think you have to be loyal to brands.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like I've spent a good 20 years probably in the Pegasus, just going through from whatever, I don't know what it would have been, 18, 17, something or other, back then when I first wore them. And then, just recently tried the Glide Ride ASICS and, yeah, I really enjoyed the difference, the rocker in it. Feels really good. And, like, I'm still switching between the two shoes, but, I was quite, I don't know if it was loyal, I just really got attached to the Pegasus now.
Yeah. And I think we can be a bit superstitious, like, oh, it's always worked. And I agree with that too. I often say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, if you've always worn something, you know it works for you, half your luck, and you can stick at it. I'm talking about patients who have, say, repeated injuries or new injuries or issues or problem with load, and they are trying to mix the recipe up a bit. That's more where the disloyalty comes in. But if you absolutely know that something works for you and it's always worked for you, by all means, stick with it.
Yeah. Yep. And Sophia, another area that you're very well versed in, apart from the podiatry skills that you've gotten, everything that you've discussed then, is around women's health. And a topic that comes up from time to time is during the time of menstruation, what are some kinds of activity and exercise that you could recommend? And is there anything to avoid?
Yeah, cool. So I guess short disclaimer, or let me preface this by saying, I'm by no means providing advice to anyone on women's reproductive health. That's definitely not something that I'm cut out to do, and definitely not something I intend on doing. What I would be really happy to share with you is my passion for women's health and my enjoyment in discussing exercise and activity in a way that supports women to understand their training relating to their menstrual cycle, and also to share my own personal experience as an active woman that definitely sits alongside all of the incredible advice I've received from qualified professionals in this space. I've done a lot of research myself just based on my own personal interest, and obviously the understanding I've gained from speaking with and listening to lots of girls talk about exercise and activity and how that aligns with their cycle. So yeah, big disclaimer, definitely not giving advice about reproductive health for ladies who seek or seeking that support. The best place to start is your GP, and the very best people to see in this space are gynecologists first and foremost. And additionally, and also a personal preference of mine is naturopaths, and also valuable input can be from practitioners of traditional Chinese medicine. So with all that said, I guess today's a really great opportunity to open up another conversation. I do enjoy these conversations about the best, not necessarily best, but kind of most suitable, most appropriate, most beneficial training that a woman can do around the time of her period. So that's the bleed, that's the start of the menstrual cycle. And I guess in the interest of keeping this a little more simple and easy to digest, I will kind of hone in on just the period. So that's only one phase of the menstrual cycle, just because I'd rather listeners take away just some easy to digest chunks of information rather than be blown away with, there's a lot of terminology and a lot of different hormones at play, and I don't want them to go away with a lot of confusion. I'd rather them just understand one part, probably the most relevant part, in terms of how it affects you. And then maybe in future, we could tease out some other aspects of the menstrual cycle and suitable activities and exercise to be considered at those stages. So just talking about the start of the menstrual cycle, which is the period, I want to talk about premenstrual and menstruation. So this is women who are not taking any contraception. So not the contraceptive pill, not the IUD, not the Implanon. This is women who are cycling naturally without synthetic hormone manipulation. So basically, let's have a think about how women, and I guess the most important thing is for a woman to track her cycle. So it's super easy. The first day you have a bleed, the first day you start bleeding is your first day of your period. That's day one. And you could mark that in your diary, calendar, phone, whatever. And then the next time you have a period, that's your next day one. So you just count the number of days between day one and day one. And that's the number of days that your cycle is. And that can change, but in most healthy cycling women, it tends to sit around the same number of days approximately. So once you know the length of your cycle, you know that when, let's say you have a 28-day cycle, because that's just the textbook normal, although as we've come to learn, there's like 10% of women who actually have a 28-day cycle, but let's just go with a 28-day cycle. When you're at day 26, 27, 28, you're premenstrual because you're about to start a new cycle. So I'd like to talk about the kinds of exercise, activity, movement, training that's appropriate for a woman in the premenstrual phase and then early menstruation, early phase of menstruation. And the reason I hone in on this stage is because that's when you're most likely to have symptoms. Those symptoms vary enormously from woman to woman, but generally some common symptoms in the premenstrual phase. So you've got to imagine the uterus has had progesterone acting on it for a number of weeks, couple of weeks, basically since ovulation. And the uterus has started building up a really juicy wall called the endometrium, ready for a little embryo to implant if fertilization occurred. So the uterus has got this big juicy wall lining, it's blood, called the endometrium, and the body is starting to prepare to move that endometrium, pass it out through the vagina during the bleed. So as that starts to happen, there can be cramping, so lower abdominal cramping, which is quite uncomfortable. Women can feel a little bloated. They can feel fatigued or have lethargy, and this ties into how energy demanding this process is. So it's no wonder they're fatigued. A loss of appetite or a gain in appetite. Some women suffer from headaches or migraines. So with all this in mind, I like to think of the most appropriate training to be really restorative training. So exercise that serves the body. Think of things like a light run as opposed to a threshold session, or opposed to hill reps, or as opposed to a 2-hour hilly long run. So a light run is fantastic. A nice brisk power walk is great. Swimming is beautiful. Spin sessions are good, but sometimes spin sessions can be really intense and in a really hot environment, which can exacerbate some of those symptoms. So careful how women use the bike, but an outdoor bike ride can be lovely. Yoga and Pilates are brilliant. Things that help the body relax, things that serve the body, and ways in which we don't deplete our energy stores, because this is, we're about to embark on a really energy demanding process, which is the bleeding. And it's really nice to let the body have really rich energy stores, nourishing meals, a lot of sleep, hydration, so that when you do start to go through the bleeding phase or your period, you're not depleted already because you've trained too hard. So that's in the sort of the premenstrual phase when some women, and every woman would know if she has premenstrual symptoms, everybody would know, and they could tell you what they're like. And if that's the case, those are the kind of activities. Then day one rolls around and the bleeding begins. And I think those kind of activities, light running, walking, swimming, like gentle riding, yoga, Pilates, continue on for say day one and day two of the cycle. And that gives you about 5 days of the cycle where you've modified things to support your body. Then by about day three, in most, I'm talking in really general terms here, in most women, day three, the bleeding becomes a lot lighter. And because there's most of the endometrium or a lot of the endometrium has already passed out, passed through, there's less blood. So there's less contractions of the uterus going on. So a lot of women are less symptomatic at that stage and would feel a little better, less tired, less fatigued, and probably a little ready to go, like ready to start rolling again. So essentially, in an average cycling woman who knows her symptoms, and obviously I'm basing this a lot on myself because it's exactly how I roll, the 3 days prior and the first 2 days of the cycle are when I like to roll, tone things down a bit. And if you think about it, most athletes, male or female, if this is rolling around once a month, 5 days once a month to take the foot off the throttle, back things up a bit, is probably very good for you anyway.
Absolutely, yeah. That sort of 3 weeks up, 1 week down sort of cycle, which, yeah, for all athletes is really important.
For all athletes. Yeah. Now, granted, some women and lucky ducks, they really don't feel much at all. Like it just comes and it goes. And that's great. And in those situations, and let me point out across the board, it is perfectly safe. It is 100% healthy. In fact, it's recommended repeatedly to exercise and stay active during the premenstrual and menstruation phase. In fact, it supports and can help with period pain and symptoms. So it's not about, you know, when we look back to generations before and in some cultures, and it breaks my heart that women were really ostracized and pushed away from their communities because they were thought of as filthy for menstruating. So it's absolutely not the case that staying at home with a hot water bottle is going to be better for you than getting outside, breathe fresh air and move your body to help your body. But for women who really just cycle through and don't hardly notice the difference, their period of you know, their down few days of the month might occur at a different stage. But I personally think even if you are more asymptomatic around your period, I don't think it's a bad idea considering what's going on in the body at that time. It's really good to drive blood and oxygen and nutrients to the reproductive organs and not drive it away to the working limbs, your arms and legs and your heart and your brain and your digestive system. Drive the blood and oxygen and nutrients to your reproductive system by backing off the intensity and allow your body to get all the nutrients in the right place where it needs it.
So you're really working with the body in that
Absolutely.
Sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Listening to your body. And that's what I love about natural menstruation instead of manipulated cycles or manipulated hormones is that, you know, it's just such a beautiful way to check in with your body and know exactly what you're doing. And, you know, from the duration of your cycle, the whole cycle, but also the period, the color of your menstrual blood, the flow, the duration, your symptoms, you can find out so much about what's going on inside your body. Like girls get a monthly health check card. Like we get a card that we can check off things. You boys get nothing. I'm joking. And you can find out about your gut health, your endocrine health, your immune health, your reproductive health. So many systems that tell you exactly what's going on based on exactly what goes on during the whole cycle, but particularly what you can see, and you can see your period.
Oh, thanks very much for sharing there, Soph. I know Zach and I are probably not the experts.
Above our pay grade, that topic.
Yeah. Above our pay grade. But no, I reckon a lot of people are going to get a lot out of what you've just discussed there. Particularly in terms of, you know, making sure that you aren't trying to, you know, you've got a session down. Like I say, like, you know, you might have 10 or 5-6 hill reps. And then just being honest with yourself and making sure that you reduce that intensity and make sure to look after your body. So
I know, just off the back of that, Matty, you know, as a male coach who coaches females, you know, it's something we're all trying to learn as guys to really educate ourselves to, you know, to find out what we can do to sort of accommodate, and as coaches, yeah, really build programs that ensure that these, you know, this is taken into account as well, and how we navigate through these periods.
And I, you know, I'm so grateful that you guys are such champions of women, and that we want to support women in this, and we want to have this open dialogue. I think the best place for a woman to start is if she's not tracking her cycle, start tracking your cycle. And then once you've tracked your cycle, basically it's good to, for 1 month, write down your symptoms. And then it's really just easy to talk to your coach and just say, I have a 28 day menstrual cycle. And the 2 days before I start bleeding, or it's 2 days before, the last 2 days of my cycle, so before my period, this is how I feel. And it really doesn't change that much from month to month, especially the healthier you are and the healthier your cycle is. It's pretty similar month to month. And you might just say on these two dates, and men aren't supposed, you are not supposed to know what day in July this year Sally Smith is going to get her period. You are not expected to know that. But Sally might say to you, she might give you the 2 or 3 days of the month, and she can just send them to you in an email where she feels a little more fatigued, a little bit symptomatic, kind of just wants you to back things off. And I would encourage the females to get on the front foot with a male or a female coach and just say, this month, the 14th, 15th and 16th of May, can you just back things off for me, because it's around the time of my cycle. Simple as that. And so it's mostly on the part of the woman, and as it should be, it's her cycle, and she really should be taking, you know, she should know it herself, and most women do, or a lot of women do. Especially athletes, I find, who are very in tune with their body. And if they just send you in an email a couple of dates of the month, you know, even if it's a week, whatever it is, from X to Y, back things off a bit in line with my cycle. And then, you know, if you've been giving her a 2 hour 15 long run, it might be 80 minutes or 90 minutes. It could be an offered, you might do a suggested rest day. You just make it, tweak a few things on those dates. I always put like I might do easy 40 minutes or rest, or easy 40 minutes or 60 minute walk plus stretch or rest. So it means I wake up in the morning and I can kind of go to the smorgasbord and pick how they feel. Because you might feel a bit worse that month. You might actually feel a bit better and say, oh, told Sophie I'd be feeling fine, but I told Sophie I wouldn't be feeling that well, but I actually feel good. So I will go and do that 60 minutes. And there it is.
Awesome. That's amazing advice on, yeah, obviously earlier it was great to hear about, you know, with the podiatry, but then to sort of been able to zero in on that subject as well. It's yeah, it's always great having you on, Soph, because you definitely bring another level to the show when you come on, other than yourself and mattress. So
oh no, we've all got our areas, and you guys are passionate about other things that you bring to the table. It just happens to be, yeah, an area of passion of mine.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks very much, Soph, for giving up your time this Monday afternoon.
All good, guys. I'll let you go.
Yes. Yep. Thank you again, Soph. And they can find you at FitzPod. We'll put all the links in the show notes if people want to reach out to you, ask you any questions about what we've spoken about. And thanks again, Soph. And no doubt you'll be we'll be back on, and we're gonna explore a few more of these topics over the season of Better With Running podcast.
Legend. Not to pump my tires, but if you want, Zaka, totally optional, you could link to that blog.
Yes. We'll drop that blog you wrote as well. That'd be great.
That just if it's a lot of this is going out or people are running and listening, pretty much summarized in the blog from a couple of months back.
Fantastic.
All right.
Right. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Better With Running podcast. Always great to have Sophie Fit join us and chat all things running and some podiatry and some women's health. Definitely more content like this that we want to keep bringing on this show. Do hit us up with any questions. You can send us an Instagram message or Facebook or an email. So that would be great. We really want to cover any of these topics that you would like to hear from us. But that's enough from us. Enjoy the rest of your run.